Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal. I'm here with my partner, Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon or reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. Good morning, Francis.
Hey there, Mark. How are you this morning?
I'm doing stunningly.
Yeah, we're both doing a little stunningly. We have our new restaurant, by the way, is slated to open in downtown New Brunswick. I don't know, a couple of weeks?
Very soon.
Oh, my goodness.
But dangerously soon.
Very, very stressful to
say goodbye to sleep.
Oh, my God. Say goodbye. I haven't seen it in months. I would like to talk today about a telephone call we got from a customer who I'm afraid we didn't, I don't think I got him a satisfactory answer, or an answer that he found to be satisfactory.
And we hate not giving satisfactory answers, so now we'll give it to all of you while we give it to him.
Yeah. The gentleman called, and I'll give you the call, and then we'll give you the background. The gentleman called. He said, listen, when I was into your restaurant just last night, and the server tasted my wine, and is that your company policy? And my ops manager said, yeah, that's the company policy. Mm-hmm. And I heard her go through the whole thing, and he wasn't buying it. He felt like the server had
stolen a little bit of his wine. We're not stealing it, we promise.
Here's an interesting thing, and he said he'd never seen that before, and I'm not surprised. You don't see it around all the time in Jersey, but in any serious wine restaurant,
right,
there should be someone tasting your wine before you do.
And actually, traditionally, what the sommelier would wear is what we call a tasse de vin, and he would wear it around his neck, and it's a little silver cup on a chain. And the tasse de vin was for exactly that purpose, to taste the wine.
And if you go to very formal restaurants, there's a place in Washington where the guy still wears a tasse de vin, and mm-hmm. in Manhattan at the 21 Club, the guy still wears a tasse de vin. Mm-hmm. And in France, in the most formal restaurants, there were tasse de vins, but that's really a relic.
We had some friends give us some silver tasse de vins when we opened.
I have a tradition. Nice. Whenever I work New Year's Eve, I wear my silver tasse de vin under my tuxedo on New Year's Eve. But that's because I'm a dork.
So then who gets to find your tasse de vin?
Depends on how good I'm doing on New Year's Eve. We're taking applications online. What's happened now is in formal wine service, the way it works is the waiter comes over, or the sommelier or the captain comes over and presents you with a bottle of wine and confirms that it's the wine that you've ordered. Mm-hmm. That's your chance to say, no, I ordered the 97, not the 99.
Right. And that's a good opportunity, and you should, when that waiter comes over to present you the bottle, you should inspect that bottle. And what I'll find is some people, if they're getting a bottle of champagne, they'll give it a touch to make sure it's cool enough for them.
Mm-hmm.
Or even a bottle of red, mm-hmm. give it a touch to make sure it's not too warm. Inspect the label. Make sure that it's the cuvee that you've ordered. Make sure that it's the producer that you've ordered.
And where most restaurants screw up is make sure that it's the year that you order.
Right.
Especially, and we have even once in a blue moon, and mm-hmm. it really is once in a blue moon, have
it
made
happens.
A mistake. You
sure.
know, the wrong wine is listed, the waiter grabs the wrong vintage out of the bin, and the labels are exactly the same except for that one number.
Right.
But in any event, what then happens is once you've accepted the bottle of wine, the waiter in a formal restaurant will open the bottle,
mm-hmm.
and what you'll see often is they, in casual service, they'll just pour you a taste of it, and then you say yes or no, and you take it or you don't. When you take it, even if the bottle is off, after it's been poured out, that's your bottle of wine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not your opportunity to say, I think this bottle is a little off and send it back, is now gone.
Well, in a restaurant like ours, and in most high-service restaurants, even after we've poured the wine, if you go back to it and say, you know what, I tasted this before, but it really doesn't taste quite right to me, most restaurants will still take that bottle of wine back.
In most cases. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're ordering the 1925, you know, Chateau
right.
de Chem.
And it's because what will happen to the 1925 Chateau de Chem, just so you know, is if you leave that wine in your glass for an hour, it may actually go bad in your glass in an hour.
We're getting really dorky here, Mark. That's just to finish the point. Here,
okay.
Sorry to bore. If any of you have not snoozed.
You started it.
If any of you have not snoozed and driven off the road, what happens in formal service is the waiter or the captain will pour himself or herself a taste of the wine in a little glass
mm-hmm.
and have a little taste of it to make sure that there's nothing wrong with the wine. And if there is something wrong with the wine, it'll never make it to your table.
Exactly.
And that's part of formal service.
And the purpose of that is so you don't have to taste a corked wine. And when we say a corked wine,
and wonder, is this right or is this wrong? Am I going to embarrass myself in front of my boss or my girlfriend or whomever?
And when we say corked wine, what we're talking about there is a wine that tastes like a wet paper bag. It's a problem that goes wrong with wine. Corks sometimes and can affect the wine.
All right, so we're done. So there you are. If a waiter or a captain tastes your wine, it's a mark of quality and it's a mark of service. And it's also, by the way, if you're restaurateurs out there, I recommend people go to formal service, and I'll tell you why. For many years, we didn't, and we switched over about 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we did. I mean, one of the most heartbreaking things. I mean, sometimes people would send back a perfectly fine bottle of wine, which is unfortunate because they don't know whether it's good or not. But now that they see the waiter taste it and it's good, they'll accept it. But the other thing that's just as bad is sometimes we would serve a corked bottle of wine to somebody.
Sure.
The person who ordered it doesn't really pick it out, and then they drink, and you're clearing the table, and there's half a bottle of wine left, and it's disgusting. And you say, oh, you know, if I only had known, you know, and these people walked out thinking that it was a bad bottle of wine.
Or that you recommended something that wasn't very good.
That it was a poor bottle of a poor wine when it was just an off bottle of a very good wine. And so if you are a restaurateur, and you have your staff that's well-trained enough to taste it, you can prevent that from getting to your customer.
One of the other really great benefits of that is I see our employees are very, very familiar with the wine. So even if a wine is just a little bit off of where it should be, it's just a little bit off-center, my waiter may have tried that wine five times in the last 2 weeks. So he knows that it's just a little bit off from where it should be, and he can take it back and say, you know what, this wine isn't showing as well as some of my other bottles.
And the other thing is people wonder how we got the most wine-knowledgeable staff in the state, or among the most wine-knowledgeable staffs in the state. It's because our captains and waiters taste all the wines in our cellar all the time. And so when you ask them for a recommendation, they are intimately – so you wonder, you know, how does this 23-year-old talk intelligently about Grand Cru Burgundy?
He tastes 25 bottles of wine a night.
That's exactly right. Anyway, so there's all we have on formal wine service. You know, there was an article in the paper that I read just recently about another thing having to do with service, about music in restaurants.
Yeah, it was really an interesting little article, and I'm going to have to rush through a little bit because we're coming up on
the break.
But what it pretty much said was people will spend more in restaurants where there is classical music playing than in the same restaurant where there's pop music playing, and more in a restaurant where there's pop music playing than they will in a restaurant where there's silence. And I thought that was really, really an interesting little tidbit, that people will spend as much as 10% more in a restaurant classical music playing.
I think that's an interesting way. I mean, you know, it's funny. Corporations study these things. We just sort of wing it. You know, we're like, oh, that sounds
that
nice.
Sounds
we'll,
nice.
We'll,
exactly.
We'll play that. I would like to have dinner to that. But you know, that is sort of interesting how that works subliminally. And I think that at home, when you have guests over your house, it's funny how you can, because we watch when we set the mood of a restaurant. The music can absolutely change the tone of a room.
It's, you know, the article gave some speculation as to the reasons, but my belief is that it's just you're more relaxed. If you're more comfortable and more relaxed and calmer, then you're set to have a good time. You're set to have all the experiences.
When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking with John Stauber, who's the author of a book called Mad Cow USA, and we're going to be talking with him about mad cow disease in the United States, and we're not going to be relaxed after that. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis shot a stage left restaurant in downtown New Brunswick, and I am always amused when the Animal Talk commercial comes on during our show, because we're the other show about animals on this radio station. We're the show about eating them. So
you know, if the animals could actually talk...
Yeah.
If especially cows, I'm sure they'd ask us not to feed them cow.
Yeah, and to talk about that very topic, we have returning to the show one of our favorite guests and the guest who generated the most email of any of the shows we've done. We have John Stauber, who's the author of a fabulous book on mad cow disease called Mad Cow USA. Hi, John.
Hi, so we generated some email responses.
Yes, we did. You scared the bejesus out of everybody, John. We actually were going to have you on last month, but we had to bring everybody back out of off the cliff.
Yeah. Actually, we got a lot of email from here, and what was interesting is we got a lot of email from Europe as well, because this is a worldwide issue. For those of our listeners who didn't hear the first show, why don't we recap? What is all this about mad cow disease? Is this really serious?
It's really serious. The only good news about mad cow disease is that so far in the 10 years since it's moved into people, only 160 people have died worldwide. That's good news because millions and millions of people are being exposed to mad cow infected beef. And there's more good news, which is we know how to stop mad cow disease, this horrific, fatal dementia disease that rots the brain of cattle and humans. And that's by stopping the practice of feeding slaughterhouse waste to cattle. It's that simple.
And the bad news?
The bad news is here in the United States, everyone thinks our government did that, but we haven't. We're continuing the practice. The European nations, Japan, South Korea, they've stopped the practice and they're fixing the problem. We're covering it up.
Let's go back and review to people. How is a cow likely to get mad cow disease?
There's only one way, really, and that's by eating infected parts of other cattle.
Okay, but cattle don't eat cattle. They're vegetarians.
Right. They eat grass, don't they?
That's certainly true in nature, but over the last 30 years, the industrial meat industry has figured out that they could take the 50% of every slaughtered cow that's unfit for human consumption, and rather than disposing of it in some appropriate way, turn it into fat and protein supplements and feed it back to cattle. It seemed like an efficient and good idea until cattle began going mad and dying of this horrific dementia, this prion disease called bovine spongiform encephalopathy. That was way back 20 years ago when the first mad cow emerged in Britain. 10 years ago, Britain was forced to admit that the disease was emerging in people. Just this summer, I think since I've been on the show, the USDA, in investigating the Texas mad cow, concluded that indeed we've had mad cow disease here in the U.S. probably for a decade. This cow in Texas that we almost didn't catch because of incompetence or negligence at USDA, this cow, USDA concluded, became infected by eating other infected cattle. Unfortunately, USDA then closed their investigation and said, we're not going to identify where this cow was raised, the farm on which it was raised, nor are we going to identify the 12 feed and milling companies that supplied that farm with food. Case closed.
Because we don't want to scare anybody with the truth.
No, and then just a couple of weeks ago, the Food and Drug Administration finally came out with some new regulations that they've been talking about for a couple of years, and these regulations are totally inadequate. Again, there's
I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves there, here, John. We just want to recap a little bit. So what we did back in the 80s is we took all of the unusable cattle parts, and we decided that the best way we could use those cattle parts was to feed them back to cattle and turn them into cannibals in essence.
In essence, that's what happened. There's a business called rendering that is part of the livestock and animal feed industry, and rendering plants are big operations, big factories that receive this massive amount of slaughterhouse waste and cook it down in a myriad of products result. But beginning especially in the 80s, one of the major products was a feed supplement, fat and protein supplement that was fed back to livestock. And this practice is more widespread in the U.S. than anywhere else. We're the world's largest producer of rendered byproduct feed, and despite the emergence of mad cow disease, the big players like Tyson, Cargill, Swift are insisting on maintaining this process, and the U.S. government is supporting them in that.
You know, as kind of ooky as it sounds, the idea of using cattle waste and boiling that down and making it protein and putting that back in cattle feed, I mean, it doesn't sound like a horrible idea until, of course, you have the emergence of mad cow disease when you say, uh-oh, well, that sounded like a good idea, but now it's...
It sounds like a bad idea.
But it's an acceptable idea if it doesn't cause any harm, but now we know that that's the only way that you can get mad cow disease, and they still don't want to stop?
No, they don't want to stop, and again, as you saw from the response to our last discussion, if most Americans were aware of what your audience is aware of, there would be a hue and cry and an outrage that would force action. That's what's happened in Britain and the European Union countries and Japan. But here, unfortunately, ever since Oprah Winfrey was put on trial, the media here has done a very poor job of communicating this issue, and people think we've fixed the problem.
Well, I mean, what we get a lot from the FDA is we get a lot of things that sound like they're actually putting these bans into place, but they're not.
Absolutely. In fact, just a few weeks ago, I received a call from one of the top reporters in the country with one of the major papers, and he was doing an update on this story, and he was shocked to learn that his own reporting had been misled by the FDA. He had reported back in early 2004 when, at that time, the head of the FDA, McClellan, had said, we're going to ban the feeding of cattle blood to cattle. We're going to ban the feeding of
poultry litter.
And the thing
is, that didn't happen. We have a situation where instead of dealing with a problem with a solution, we're dealing with a problem with a public relations campaign. We're going to be talking more about that with John Stauber, author of Mad Cow USA. In just a moment, you're listening to The Restaurant Guy, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 1125.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. And our guest today is John Stauber, author of Mad Cow USA and one of the country's top experts on mad cow disease. And he is not within the FDA and often disagrees with the FDA. And you were talking to us before the break, John, about a reporter from a major paper in the United States who had called you to, and was shocked to learn that his own reporting had been an error. How was he misled by the FDA?
Well, he was misled by taking the FDA at its word. I told him, you're not the only one. This is what happened, and I think it's really intentional where the Food and Drug Administration, Commissioner McClellan, in early 2004, after the first mad cow had been identified in the state of Washington, said, okay, we're going to fix some of these problems. We're going to ban the feeding of cattle blood to cattle. We're going to look into this practice of feeding poultry litter that contains cattle meat and bone meal to cattle.
Okay, one of the things that we were doing is we were feeding cattle to chickens,
right.
Then taking their litter, which has got cattle parts in it, and feeding their litter to cattle.
Okay. So it's chicken litter, but we're not talking like the chickens aren't. We're not talking about like the chickens throwing away the wrappers
right,
from their
no
candy.
Right, there's no wrapper that they're right, exactly. That's not the kind of litter
so you,
we're talking
you
about.
You know what we're talking about out there, right? Okay, I just want to make sure that everybody knows.
Yeah, you know, litter. Also, it's so euphemistic, but what they do is they just bulldoze out the defecation and the waste and the spilled feed from these huge chicken factories, and that ends up getting fed to cattle.
Does anybody think out there in listener land that this should be illegal? That you should, because you know what? Here's the deal.
It's one of those things that if you ask anybody, if you give them the facts and you say good idea, bad idea, you're going to get 98% of the people who say it's a bad idea.
And so, but rather than solve the problem, because you know what? That chicken litter is cheap, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the thing is, I'm going to eat that cow. I want to know what that cow eats. I mean, it's nature. And that's something that I think is why we are so in America able to be convinced by a good public relations campaign and good commercials. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk more with John Stauber, who's our guest and author of America.
We've got to talk more about the FDA as well.
We're going to talk about the FDA and what's really going on with the cows that we eat and how you can make sure that you get good beef. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design. 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through RestaurantGuysRadio.com, where you can now download our podcasts on iTunes.
Our guest today, returning to the show, is John Stauber, who is author of a book called Mad Cow USA, which we will link you to on our website, and you should really go pick up. It is a very telling book on what's going on with our country's management of mad cow disease, which is a terrible disease that can be managed. Why aren't we? I don't know. Now, we were talking before the break, and John, you brought us through where we discovered the mad cow in the United States. We discovered that this disease was happening. We know why it's happening. We know how to stop it. And then the FDA introduced what's been called the firewall feed ban, which is the way to stop mad cow disease, is to stop feeding cows meat, because they're not supposed to eat meat. They're cows. So this firewall feed ban sounds like, you know, firewall, that's pretty effective. Is it a pretty good firewall? Or is it like a Pinto?
Right. It's more like the exploding Pinto,
right.
Unfortunately, which some of us remember. The firewall feed ban is exactly what we need. This is what has been put in place in Britain, in the rest of the European Union countries, in Japan, and it's what I've been describing. No more feeding of any animal protein to livestock. That's what spreads mad cow disease. That's the only thing that spreads mad cow disease. That's how you fix the problem. So we were told in the summer of 1997 that the U.S. was implementing this firewall feed ban, and now it's like a mantra. It keeps being repeated. But as Sheldon Rampton and I reported in our book, Mad Cow USA, which first came out just after the FDA announcement of 97, it's really a farce. It's a very weak feed labeling requirement, which says that meat and bone meal, slaughterhouse waste from ruminant animals, is supposed to be labeled do not feed to ruminants.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. It doesn't actually get this stuff off the market. It doesn't stop the feeding. And then, to sort of add insult to injury, they said, but it's just fine to continue feeding cattle blood to cattle and cattle fat, tallow contaminated with cattle protein to cattle, even though we knew then that blood transmits these types of diseases. So really what's happened, and as we show in our book, this goes way back, unfortunately, a decade and a half, is that the U.S. government, rather than acting to protect livestock and human health, has consistently fooled the public, fooled the press, and kept this practice going. And we're not talking about a little bit of material. We're talking about billions of pounds of cattle fat, cattle blood.
You know what I think is interesting? When they allow the cattle blood, even they don't even have to label the cattle blood. They call it milk replacer. And so a young calves, rather than having their mother's milk, they have milk replacer, which is cattle blood. Which, you know, it's milk replacer is a good euphemism if your cow's a vampire.
That's right. Yeah.
But back in September, there it seemed like the FDA was doing making some real headway and some real progress here. What stopped that progress from happening?
Well, it was interesting looking at this. In September, the head of the Food and Drug Administration, Lester Crawford,
mm-hmm. It seemed like he really was making some real pushes to make this problem go away.
Well, I think if you look at what Lester Crawford has been saying over the last couple of years, there's been a high level of frustration inside the FDA. Scientists there know what the right thing to do, but it hasn't been done. And in September, Crawford was speaking at a food conference in Washington and indicated that within a matter of days there would be some new regulations in place that would prevent some of these feedings, and what actually happened was within a week, he was gone.
Yeah, he was fired.
We don't know if he was fired. We don't know if he was forced out or jumped or whatever, but he was gone. And then on October 4th, the FDA did come out with the regulations, and they were worthless. No banning of cattle blood to cattle, no banning of the feeding of cattle fat to cattle. Mm-hmm. What they're going to do is in animals over 30 months of age, they're going to remove just the brain and just the spinal cord because those are highly infectious and keep those out of the rendering process. But that's only about 5%.
Right. It's only a small part of the problem.
Yeah.
So, but just to recap, and I really wanted to touch on this point. The director of the FDA finally said, we're going to come out with some rigorous regulations to prevent mad cow and to stop using these extra products. And 10 days later, he wasn't in his job anymore.
That's right. Mm. And he's not talking about it, but I think it's pretty obvious from his statements that this played a role. What I've been told consistently for the last couple of years from my sources is that it's the White House that is in charge, and the FDA has been very frustrated because the steps they want to take have been consistently blocked, and the White House is acting, again, on behalf of Tyson, Cargill, Swift, the big corporations dominating the cattle and livestock industry. I mean, imagine Tyson, their beef, their chickens, their slaughterhouse waste, their poultry litter. And it's so convenient and economical for them to be able to feed this stuff back to cattle.
Well, we talked about testing for mad cow being relatively inexpensive. This is a fairly expensive process. Not using all this waste product and having to purchase other products
dispose
of the waste is going to be a fairly expensive process, but it's got to be done.
Right, it's got to be done, and essentially what the FDA said is, look, there's a huge waste problem here. Half of every slaughtered animal has waste, and, you know, rather than forcing the industry to find ways to deal with that waste problem, gee, just because it's convenient, we're going to let them continue feeding it despite mad cow.
Let me read to you from an article in the New York Times in which you were quoted. They also quoted Dr. Steven Sundloff, who's some toady who works for the FDA. Okay. He's the director of veterinary medicine who announced the proposed rule changes, the toady rule changes. They don't do anything. Since June 2004, he noted the United States Department of Agriculture has tested lots of cattle for the disease, and he says there's no risk, don't worry about it, it'll be fine. And he talks about the cost to the beef industry of really imposing a real firewall feed ban. And he says, getting rid of the vertebrae, spines, nerves, eyes, intestines, and other potentially infectious parts of all cattle, including the meat attached to nerves, would create more than 2 billion pounds of waste, which he said would be an environmental problem and a big expense for the industry. Mm-hmm. So instead, we'll feed it to our kids.
Yeah, that's the rationale. And I guess if you're going to accept that rationale, you could take just about any business or industry or private home and say, you know, dealing responsibly with your waste is difficult. Why don't you just grind it up and feed it to the neighbors?
Right. Yeah. Forget the sewers. We don't need the sewers anymore. That's a very expensive system we have.
But when you look at it, what would it add to the cost of a pound of meat? I mean, would it raise it a buck?
I don't think anyone has actually worked that out, except maybe industry, and they'd probably say, oh, it would make it prohibitive. But I think what you need to do is just look at...
It doesn't matter. You can't serve me poison.
Yeah, look at Britain, look at the European countries. Last I noticed, you could still walk into restaurants there and buy cuts of beef. And the great thing is you're buying beef that hasn't been fed beef and that's been tested for mad cow disease. And so... this is a dodge. This is a typical industry dodge. Anytime a big, powerful industry wants to not do the right thing, it comes forward and says, oh, we'll all go broke. We'll go out of business if we are forced to do the right thing.
Well, when we come back, I want to talk more about places that may indeed be doing the right thing.
And I also want to talk about testing and how, you know, because you may wonder out there in listener land why, you know, individual farms just don't say, okay, we'll test all of our cows and we'll certify our own beef is free of mad cow disease. That's not quite as easy as it sounds. And we'll talk about that with John Stauber, author of Mad Cow USA, in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, back at the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Our guest today is John Stauber, who's the author of Mad Cow USA, which is a book talking about the crisis of mad cow disease in the country, which is really sort of underreported, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. And John has a website as well that you can visit. We're going to link you all to that on our website, which is restaurantguysradio.com. John, we were talking about mad cow disease and how the government's not really doing a good job testing and being truthful with us about what's out there. Now, you would think that there would be some producer of beef somewhere who would just say, you know, we're going to test all of our beef, and we'll certify that every cow that we slaughter is free of mad cow disease, which physically can be done. Why hasn't that happened?
Well, actually, a producer did come forward, the Creekstone Company out of Arkansas, about a year and a half ago, to try to win back their Japanese market, mm-hmm. Arranged with the Japanese government, who rightly have been banning U.S. beef until we take these steps.
And just to fill everybody in, there are a lot of countries out there that are no longer accepting U.S. beef, and the U.S. is trying to force them to take U.S. beef through economic sanctions.
Right, which is the right thing for these companies to do, and which the United States did to other companies. But now that we've got the problem, we've turned hypocritical and said, hey, mm-hmm. it's us, take our beef.
Right. And these countries, by the way, have said, test your beef and we'll take your beef.
Right.
Absolutely. And here's the Creekstone Company a year and a half ago being especially responsible, arranging with the Japanese government to set up a testing operation. And in steps the U.S. Department of Agriculture saying, this is illegal. It's illegal under U.S. law for anyone but the U.S. Department of Agriculture to test for mad cow disease. We don't care if this is going to save your company. We don't care if it would be a model for other mm-hmm. U.S. meat packers. We're not going to let you do it.
Okay, hold on. Let me just let me. If you're not listening, if you were paying attention to something and driving by in your car, what we've just learned is that if I'm a cattleman and I want to test my own cow, it's illegal. Not only is the federal government advocating their responsibility to test the cows, they've made it illegal for a private company to test its own cows because they don't want the truth to get out.
Because they're afraid that we'll find mad cow in...
Yeah, I think there's two things going on here. One is the more testing, the more mad cow disease we're going to find. The USDA now admits, as of August, gee, it's been here for a decade. The other thing is that companies testing their cattle would be able to provide, probably both for the domestic and international market, a preferred product. If you are aware of these facts and you go into the store, you're going to say, hey, I'll take the stuff that's tested free of mad cow disease.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a threat to these big boys, again, Tyson, Cargill and Swift, who just want to sell the stuff as cheaply as possible.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you said earlier in the show is the only way that mad cow can spread is by feeding cow to cow. There's a new concern out there about a way that mad cow could spread, I think, and this is a very, very scary possibility of mad cow spreading through our own human blood supply. Is that a possibility of something that can happen?
This is a very, very serious concern. And, right, it looks like with mad cow spreading cow to cow, the problem is pretty restricted to eating contaminated cow.
Mm-hmm.
But with people, we now see in Britain that the British government has announced that two humans dead of mad cow disease, they believe, picked it up not from eating infected cows, but from receiving donated blood from individuals infected with mad cow disease.
Now, how long can a human carry the human form of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease without it showing symptoms?
Well, this is stunning. In people, prion diseases can be completely invisible. A person can look completely healthy for up to 30 or 40 years after infection, and then the disease emerges, it's 100% fatal, there's no way to treat it, and death is horrific from dementia and destruction of the brain. And
okay, listen, everybody, listen up. We can now, while it's not widely, we hope, in the blood supply out there, we can test it and stop it in the cows. We can call these evil agribusiness companies out and say, listen, You cannot put this disease out in people, because once it gets into the blood supply, it's in the blood supply. And you can even give up meat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's in the human blood supply. What are you going to do about
it? There's a group called Consumers Union, and I'm going to put a link to their website that's putting up a petition that's going to go to the FDA that you can put your name on and my name's on get them to stop feeding animal products.
And the Consumers Union is not exactly a radical organization. Yeah. These are the people who tell you what stereo to buy. They put out consumer reports, and they can tell you what popcorn popper to buy. These are a very conservative group. They were for the K-car, for heaven's sake. But, you know, it's just such an obvious solution, and the only reason not to do it is because big, evil agribusiness companies have enough control over the FDA and the Department of Agriculture that they're blocking this very common-sense legislation. And, you know, Senator Corzine is running for governor. Give his office a call. Mm-hmm. Give your local representative a call. We'll link to you on our site a way to find John Stauber and connect with his website, and take some action on this, because once it gets away from us, we cannot put the genie back in the bottle. Is that a fair assessment, John?
Oh, I think that's very fair. I mean, we're dealing with an invisible disease that can spread through the blood supply. And just to emphasize that, in 1997, Britain realized, oh my gosh, this could spread through blood. They stopped using their own blood products, but obviously they didn't quit soon enough,
mm-hmm.
because they've got it spreading through, documented that it spread into people who received British blood products.
Okay. We need to look for ways in this country right now to eat beef as safely as possible, and obviously it's not completely safe. Are there things like the certified beef program in South Dakota and buying grass-fed beef and things like that are safer ways to go as far as eating beef?
Well, there are, and the bottom line is people need to make sure that the beef they're getting is documented in some way as coming from animals that have never, ever been fed animal byproducts. Certified organic is one such program, although I've heard some disturbing news about possibly allowing transition animals into organic herds. And as you mentioned earlier, cattle are now weaned on milk replacer that contains cattle fat and cattle blood. So we want to make sure that certified organic animals remain 100% free.
We'll be back in just a moment with John Stauber, author of Mad Cow USA, talking about the state of beef production in the United States. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're here with John Stauber, author of Mad Cow USA. You can find out more about him, his organization, The Good You Can Do, and his book on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. John, you were talking before about strategies people can use to continue to eat meat, because we love meat.
Because I'm not stopping to eat meat.
And still try and eat as safely as possible. And you think certified organic is a fair way to go?
Yeah, definitely. And we have to keep tough organic standards to make sure that's true. And then there are these other products, natural beef, grass-fed beef, and really because there isn't the sort of consistent nationwide standard-setting program for that, you have to look into each company's claims. And I think if a company is going to put in writing that its animals have never been fed slaughterhouse waste, that's a step to take, too, because interestingly, you don't have to be an organic producer to produce beef that's safe from mad cow disease. You just have to make sure you don't feed these products that are widely available on the commercial market.
Yeah, we made a lot of sense today, and I hope you've all been listening. John, I want to thank you for taking the time
Thanks
out of your schedule
again,
to talk
John,
with us.
Thank you very much.
You're only allowed back on the show after we haven't scared anybody for a few weeks.
We can do a show on like Ice Cream Sundays tomorrow. Just light to leaven the whole thing. Hey, thanks a lot, John.
Thanks, John.
Okay.
That was John Stauber, author of Mad Cow USA. I recommend you picking up his book. And listen, everybody, we do some fun stuff and we do some serious stuff, and this is a serious thing. But you can make a difference. And these big agribusiness companies, they have a lot of money. But I've been down. I was on the board of directors of the New Jersey Wrestling Association for many years, and we used to go lobby our congressional delegation down in Washington. Mm-hmm. And we would say things like, you know, we would show up and we would weigh in on an issue, or we'd go visit them, and they'd say things like, "Well, we've had a lot of mail on this issue. A lot of people have contacted us." And we would say to the congressman, "Well, you know, how many? What's a lot? How many calls have you gotten?" They'd say, "Oh, we got 10 phone calls and 3 letters. That's a lot." And so, for all of agribusiness's money, for all the people trying to do the wrong thing, if you actually get off your butt and pick up the phone and call your congressman and say, "I live in your district and I vote, and I want you to do stuff for mad cow disease."
Recognize that you can talk for a lot of people when you're talking to these people.
And what we want, and we don't want the spin, this firewall feed ban they keep talking about where they don't feed most animal products to animal. We don't want any animal protein fed to our ruminants, and all of our ruminants, specifically our cows, and that will solve the problem.
Yeah.
And we need to solve the problem now.
Got
to
solve it.
Now.
You know, usually Francis and I like to finish our show with a funny story or anecdote. There's really no funny stories about this.
But I love meat. I'm gonna keep eating meat, yep.
and I'm gonna find a healthy and safe way to eat meat, and I'm gonna push for that and push for that. And we need your help.
And we need your help. We need you to call. If you live in Jersey, you call Senator Corzine. You should call Senator Lautenberg, and you get something done. And you call the congressman. And
we're gonna put this petition from Consumers Union, a link to it, up on our website, so that you can sign that petition and get it out there that you don't want cow products.
Hey, listen, everybody, you go out there, you eat well, do good. We'll see you soon. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.